where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. And the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind
All
the
right.
rain.
Well, thank you for letting us give you a call this week, Angela. Where can we find you on the Twitters?
Ange Little.
All right. And so how many chats have you led for Okla Ed?
I think this is my third.
Fantastic.
So usually all about parents, something parent-related.
Well, I know that there are several parents who are probably doubling as educators. I don't know another parent that's as actively involved in the Okla Ed chats as you. So just so you know, we appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad that you all let me participate.
Oh my gosh, my husband is on getting his motorcycle, so my dogs go nuts. What made you decide on advocacy this time?
I really want to try to find a way to get more parents involved during session, and, you know, during session, just realizing the lack of involvement that we had in general, you know, not just parents themselves, but it made me wonder why more people aren't stepping up and how we could get that to happen. I think that, you know, I think I've mentioned for me, it was the third grade retention test that really, you know, kind of got me aware and awake and ready to make some changes when my boys were dealing with that. And so I really feel like if parents fully understood what's been going on with, you know, at the state level, and because, you know, initially I think for me, I thought it was at the district level. I mean, that's where I began anyways. And then when you start to realize it's all controlled by the state, you really, you know, you realize there's something you can do, because you know, everybody has their own representative or their own senator that they can reach out to. You feel more empowered. And so I just want to figure out how to get parents not only engaged, but passionate and then empowered to actually do something. And being a parent myself, I figure that's the group I should target.
Well, that's great. I think it opened a lot of educators' eyes the other night on how little they actually can verbalize some of these things. I said today that I thought if districts did a better job at informing teachers, then teachers and parents could have those, you know, communication, that line of communication throughout the year versus, you know, over a couple of months at the beginning of the year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and something I should have, and there was no way to really word it to a question, but that I, you know, I can think back with the third grade retention testing, when I very first started advocating to get that amended. I was a little worried that I was going to make, you know, the school mad or being so vocal, you know, because I didn't know everybody's positions on it. I mean, I hadn't even heard of it until my boys came up talking about it, because they were in second grade and heard third graders on the bus talking about it. And so I did a lot of checking prior to, like I called a few people at Evan Public School, you know, at the district level. I talked to our principal, I talked to their second grade teacher, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't, like, you know, going to be flagged as the problem parent, you know, this woman that's, you know, being all loud and vocal and, you know, wreaking havoc. I didn't want to be that person. And so I really feel like there's a lot of parents out there that probably feel the same way. You know, they don't want to be overly vocal or overly demanding, because they don't want to put, you know, I don't think they really want to put their public schools in a bad light or put public education in a bad light, or make, you know, cause relationship issues with people at the school. And so I really feel like if we can have more administrators and educators speaking out to parents about this, you know, verbally and consistently, then they'll feel more okay with, you know, advocating and pushing to get things changed. But, you know, I know, and somebody else, I can't remember who it was, somebody had a great answer about schools always making do. You know, I think I asked a question about funding, and they said schools always make do. So a lot of parents don't realize, and it's so true. But I'm grateful for that, because my kids don't suffer.
For
but
sure.
Then again, you know, if you're making do with everything and kids don't suffer, then parents aren't aware of funding. funding and the funding issues. You know, they think all is fine.
Right. I've said before that, you know, if we keep making do and legislators see that, then they don't need to fund us because we keep making do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, you know, then there's the flip side of you don't want the kids to suffer.
Right.
Because of it, you know, and so I don't know where that, but there's a fine line in between those two. I just don't know how you make it happen without the kids being, you know, I don't want any kids to not have a quality education.
Right. Did you have a favorite question of the night?
Let's see. I think my favorite was probably the question about, you know, not how do we get parents not only passionate, but, or not only engaged, but passionate. Because I liked all the ideas that I heard about, you know, from districts on, it's interesting to me to hear people from various areas have different ideas, you know, on what works with their parents, because it really is going to be, you know, a local issue. But another one that sticks out to me wasn't necessarily my favorite because I didn't get any responses, but I had asked about town halls and areas, you know, and then kind of did a follow-up with, if you don't have them, would you be willing, you know, to make it happen yourself? And I got no responses on that.
Right.
So I hope that maybe these people were just, you know, took it into consideration and are deciding maybe they will do that and just didn't want to commit to it right away because, you know, I know that everybody always thinks, well, I'm not the most, you know, educated or knowledgeable about this subject, but you can be. You don't even have to be, actually. I mean, I started this not knowing much at all, but I made a lot of friends and know a lot.
Yeah.
And I, you know, connected people that could help me with various situations and, you know, you just use that skill that you have. If you can be real obnoxious and, you know, get people into the same area and get the people there that do know a lot, then that's really all you have to do. You don't have to necessarily be the expert.
Well, good. Were there any of the answers that you thought, oh, that is good, and maybe we should all know about it now and take it to our districts?
Let's see. There was a few that I thought were... you know, somebody made a mess, or I can't remember which question it was, but I had said, you know, why aren't parents more involved, basically, or, you know, why do we feel like parents aren't more involved? And somebody made the point of, well, parents should be involved because teachers have to be in the classroom all day. And then someone followed up with that and said, but parents are at work all day, you know, and that's, and the majority of us are, you know, we have to work all day and we have to be employees, you know, and so... It's just as hard for parents to get to the Capitol, you know, as it is for teachers. And so I thought that was a good perspective to throw out there, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, well, parents should just go do it because we have to be there teaching their kids. Well, the parents actually have to be at work to put food on the table. So I was glad that that was made mention of. And I think an educator said it wasn't even, you know, not that I'm aware of, probably a parent and an educator, but at least it wasn't something I had to point out, you know. So I was glad to see that they were thinking of it in those terms as opposed to, you know, I never wanted to be an us versus them kind of thing. I feel like we've had legislators try to do that in the past, whether it be administrators against teachers or parents against teachers or parents against, you know, the district as a whole. Or I feel like they always try to, like, make it be an internal battle. And if we could really start to see it as a team effort and, you know, it's all of us against, you know, bad policy, then we could really start to see some changes and, you know, some strength in numbers.
Yeah, I like the way you worded some of your questions, you know, talking about it being a partnership or a team. So that was really appreciated as well.
Well, I hope that everybody sees it that way. And, you know, I can't think of a parent that, I mean, if you're at all, you know, if you're a parent and you clearly love your child, for me, I don't know of another person that I would want to fight for. I mean, when I started this, obviously, like I said, it was for my kids and third grade retention testing. But then when I really started seeing all these other issues, like, you know, the lack of pay for teachers and them, you know, using their own money for school supplies and the funding issues they deal with, and then the aspect of the third grade retention test being not only bad for kids, but, you know, basically showing teachers, we don't value your opinion professionally because we're going to have a test take over your assessment responsibilities. And we also don't, you know, value you monetarily because we don't pay you. You know, we pay you in beans. It really made me think, okay, that person is the most important person in, you know, my child's academic success. And so why, you know, if I'm going to be doing this, I'm doing it for them too, you know, not just for my kids, but half of what I'm doing is going to be for teachers because they're, you know, pouring into my children's lives every day. And I am so thankful for that. And so I'm so appreciative. So how can I, you know, if you're helping me by helping my child, how can I help you? You know? And so I really hope that other parents will, that's why I'm hopeful that they are not, that maybe it's just a lack of awareness, because once you are aware, how could you not fight for that teacher that loves your child and protects your child every day, you know, and teaches them? I mean, I've got a small, tiny amount of patience whenever it comes to my kids' homework, you know, and it's, they're my children, but sometimes I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, why are you not getting this? And I think those are my children, and I'm, you know, I get frustrated if they're not understanding something. And teachers, and with, you know, 24, 25 kids all at the same time, maybe 12 of them aren't understanding something and they're not even their kids. And here they are with the patience and the love and the passion, you know, the compassion enough to make it, you know, make it all work. And so I just hope that parents can really start to value what it is that teachers do and value what they are in their lives, and what they are in their children's lives. I mean, my boys, if we go to the grocery store or, you know, the drugstore or whatever, and we see, if we saw Adam Q at the, you know, grocery store, my boys are probably going to recognize him. That's probably a bad example. Stephanie Bice. If we see Stephanie Bice at the grocery store, they're not going to know her, you know. But a teacher walks in, any teacher from their elementary school, and it's like, you know, Elvis just entered the building, you know.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, they're so, you know, they're just so-and-so. And, I mean, they're rock stars in my children's eyes. Therefore, they're rock stars in this house and in my eyes. And so I wish parents could really start to change their mentality and pick the people that need our help to help, the people that are, you know, very important in our children's lives to help. So I'm hopeful that we'll get there. I think it's a lot about the awareness aspect, you know, just trying to get parents aware of not only what's happening, but what it is that, what does it mean to them? You know, how is it affecting their child? I think they don't, you know, it's so complicated to understand, you know, all the school, especially school finance. I mean, there's just so much of that upper level stuff that is so hard to understand. If we can break it down to what does that mean to your child specifically, then I think parents will really, you know, they'll grab onto that more and be more willing to push for change in those issues, if we can just, you know, show them how it'll affect their child.
Right.
Now, of course, that's easier said than done. But, you know, if we can at least start with the people on the Oak Ledge chat and do that at the local level somehow, you know, at least start within their school, then we've at least started, you know, and that's 100 more parents than we had, you know, this last session. So I'm hopeful that we can get there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
No problem. Thanks for reaching out. I appreciate this.
Totally.
All right. Well, welcome back to Okla Said, the official Okla Ed podcast. How's it going, Scott?
Who made it official? Do we declare it so and it is?
Well, and it says it in the show notes, so.
Okay. Well,
I think it's official.
I will not argue with you. You're a pretty bright lady.
I have no idea if any other people are podcasting about the Okla Ed hashtag. So I would think that this is pretty official.
Okay. Well, until somebody does an official super endorsed by the powers that be, we can claim it, right?
I like that.
Okay.
So I'm Erin Barnes, and you can find me on the Twitters at ebarnes73. And we've got Scott Hazelwood, and he is at Teach From Here on the Twitters.
Every day I'm there.
You are.
Yeah.
And so this week we had a parent and advocate, lead this Twitter chat, and it was partnering with Parents for Oakland Ed Advocacy.
Yep.
I think now more than ever, we need this chat.
Yeah, we need it. We really need our parents to be vocal. And I'm super thankful that Angela is. And I'm appreciative of all her hard work. And now if we can get more parents to be this vocal, I think it would send a message.
Well, and we'll get to it later in the chat, but I think that we as educators can do a little bit more to inform those parents, and maybe they will become more vocal if we give them the right information. So you want to dive in?
Yeah, let's dive in. What's our first question?
First question, why is it important for parents to advocate for the Oakland Ed at the state level?
Indeed, that's a good question.
I thought that there were a lot of really bright answers. I found two. So I apologize. I'm going out of the find a favorite tweet, but I've got two. I know. Linda Hasler Reed, she is at Linda Hasler Reed, said, critical. Legislators take parents more seriously as they are not self-serving, self-protecting label put on advocacy by educators. And it is a little insane to me how much advocating for education as an educator means that we're trying to be self-serving.
Yeah, because we just want to get paid the big bucks. We want to be millionaires, Aaron.
I do obviously want to get paid the big bucks, but I just saw OSSBA tweet out earlier that we have to buy textbooks because we didn't last year. No standards, right? And we have no money to do it.
Right.
We've got less money this year to do it. So we've got new standards and we're still having to, I guess, go to Pinterest and then plug our standards in. No textbooks.
And for, as teachers are aware, but maybe parents are not, the way that you get textbooks is there's a special textbook money and it can only be used for textbooks. And when I was in the classroom, we were on a 6-year rotation, which meant every 6 years we would adopt a new textbook and we would have money specifically for that.
Right.
And so last year there was no money specifically dedicated for that. And this year there's no money also.
That's what it's looking like. It'll be on the schools to find that money within, I guess, their general funds.
See, books are really expensive. You're talking $100 or $150 a pop plus ancillary materials plus all of that stuff. It adds up.
Indeed. Indeed. My other tweet came from Tyler Bridges, and he is at Bridges Tyler. He said, because, being brutally honest, I think teachers and admin are seen as lobbyists by Oakland Ed. Oakland Ledge. Mm-hmm. Parents are real, passionate, and crucial. And I think that that's totally true.
I think there's also some truth in that one, because I remember a couple years ago when teachers were talking about, hey, we need to have a rally at the state capitol, some of our more conservative legislators really frowned on that because we were taking time off during business hours on a state government paycheck to express our displeasure. The problem is if we work our contract hours, there's no time to go meet with our legislators when they're in session.
Right.
So how do you get around that sticky wicket?
Go ahead.
No, you first.
So Price from the Board of Education, you know who I'm talking about here,
right,
said earlier today that he thinks the quality of emergency certified teachers may be on par or better than certified educators. And if we have people on our own Board of Education who are thinking this way,
I have to respectfully disagree.
Why would they fund anything? And I think that there probably are some amazing exemplars out there of that, you know, that may be more qualified than early childhood, elementary, whatever. But the fact that he thinks that the majority of them are, I don't know.
Yeah, you and I both know alternately certified people who are out of this world rock star teachers.
No, and we're not even talking alt certified. We're talking emergency certified.
I don't know that. Is he also the the person that wants us to keep the U.S. history test, even though it's $2 million a year? See the same
oh,
guy?
Gosh, I don't remember. I don't remember who that one was. I just remember seeing that one.
Yeah, I have a problem with a statement like that. But that's just me, because teachers...
It's not just you.
Teachers
Rob
that
Miller
go through...
saw it. There's like five replies that are going underneath it, and yeah.
I've had a bit of a wonky day, so I haven't checked out the Okla Eds, but I just feel like our teacher prep situation in Oklahoma through the universities here, I think, is pretty solid, because Texas sends oodles of students up here to learn how to teach, and then we send all those kids back, if not more. I mean, so I just think that experience there benefits over an emergency cert. Having said that, we'll take any teacher we can get. And probably some of
at
those
this point, of course.
And some of those emergency cert people are bound to be brilliant.
Of course. I totally agree with that.
I liked June Kim. He is at MPS Technology. Said, what better partnership is there between P's and T's to advocate Okla legs to provide resources needed for the success of students? And I think I just loved the way that he said that. Because when teachers and parents can work together, amazing, amazing things can happen.
Yeah, that everywhere. June Kim, he's pretty thoughtful sometimes, and the way he puts things, I think, resonates with people.
Yeah, he's also hilarious.
He is hilarious.
More than a twit or two have I chuckled over what he has shared. Question two, what does your district currently do to communicate state-level issues to parents?
So my district in particular, I know especially this year, while the legislators were still in session, we created a postcard and we asked our parents and teachers, for that matter, just write your thoughts. And then our superintendent took care of the postage himself. And I thought that that was pretty awesome. We've try not to get involved, and I said this in the chat, we try not to get involved on every single little thing, because every single little thing doesn't necessarily pertain to us, but people already don't like us, and that's at Epic Charter Schools, obviously, and so we have to pick and choose our battles, but I do feel like we've done a pretty good job at informing parents of what they need to get involved in.
You teach at a charter school?
Oh gosh, you hate me now too, don't you?
Gosh, I don't know if we can be friends anymore. Just kidding.
I did like what Christy Cooper had to say, and she is at ChrisCooper80. Social media and news. Heck yeah. We have Oklahoma Education and Grindel Rick as our head in Middell. You know, I think that they probably do have a lot of information going out to parents.
I feel like there's excitement around you, Aaron.
Or just squeaky doors.
I loved what Lori Wathen had to say. She's L Sooner 2. She said, I visit with our admin, but I don't think schools do this very well. Maybe there are concerns about being seen as political. And sure. I think there's some truth to that, because as a superintendent, that really is a political position. And if you fall out of favor with certain parts of your community, then you're job hunting, right?
Indeed.
But on the flip side, I think it's so important to share where your district is. Like, where are we right now? Because we're dying, but we don't want to tell anybody because we're afraid of what they might think.
Right. Well, and I mean, share, but if we don't know, then we can't do anything as parents.
Right.
You know, if we don't know what's going on in our district, then I'm not going to call anybody, you know?
Right, right. And I know that perhaps there are instances where we don't want to share that, oh my gosh, we're bleeding money left and right, because they might think that we're not managing our resources well or something like that. But on the flip side, if we can share that information and go, here's what we're doing trying to combat that, here's how we've been doing things, then it can be a more real, hey, our community needs to rise up as one and needs to let our elected leaders know that we're struggling and not through our own faults.
For sure. Yeah.
So.
Well, question three, do you feel like getting parents informed issues priority for your district? Why and why not? If it's not, what do you think?
Oh my gosh. I think parents need to be informed on these issues. And I get where some of our more conservative people can be upset about our school districts advocating for a certain position. And I understand that, because you don't want to feel like the bully on the playground telling all your little people how to do things. You know what I mean? You have to, I know there's right. a fine line to walk in there, but I also think it's important that, gosh darn, we just have to let our communities know what is going on and let them decide. Yeah,
you don't have to say where your kids go to school, but does your kids' district do some informing for you guys?
Right. They do some informing. In fact, I sometimes wish, without going to the meeting, the school board meeting, that we could get a little bit more information on all of that. I know we're bonded out, and I know that when we have a bond election, it's a huge big deal, and we get the robocall from the superintendent, please go vote for our bond, here's what's happening. And right. she doesn't say vote for it in one way or the other. She's just, vote, this is what's coming with it.
Just do it.
Yeah. Right. But I do know that we got a piece of information from the kids, the daughter's elementary school, and it said, we have $2,335 or something. It was a very small amount to spend on our school this year from the district. So our fundraisers are really important.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was not very much money. Like, you know what $2,000 gets you? Like 50 reams of, you know, like 5 reams of paper.
No, exactly. I mean, but here's what drives me a little bit crazy about that. My church does fundraising. Mm-hmm. Gymnastics does fundraising. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I'm already fundraised out, and now I've got to, you know, fundraise for the school, which of course I'll do, you know, of course I'll do that. You know, we need it, but I didn't grow up a salesperson, you know? You know, I feel like we're putting a lot, and you know, parents involved is great, and putting it on some parents, you know, fine. But, I don't know. It just feels like we're asking a lot when obviously our tax system can probably be aligned a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree.
To figure this out.
Right. I just think we shouldn't, you know, what you said, we shouldn't have to fundraise for the school to operate. I think a school having a public education, having education period, should be a universal right, no matter where you're born, how you're born, or who you're born to. It doesn't matter if your family has money or no money. You deserve to be educated. Right. And so we need to really make our constituents aware of where we're at with all of that. And I think my school district could probably do a little bit better with some of that. But on the other hand, our school district communicates a lot of stuff. We get emails all the time from them. So
are you over emailed?
I feel like sometimes we are over emailed, but they're sharing. I just don't think like some of the financials are shared maybe as well as it could be, because we're scared.
Well, I liked what Renee Bell said here, and she is at BioBell Rocks. This is a new Twitter handle to me. Have you seen this one much?
Yeah, she's been around.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry, Renee. I'm so sorry.
You just haven't picked her. I've picked her a couple times.
You've picked her. Okay, yeah, well, I liked what she said on this one, and she said, there's so much extra, and we put that in quotes. I did that for you, Scott, so you could see that I was saying extra.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's so much extra that clogs up the Oklahoma legislature. It's difficult sometimes for parents to know what directly affects their kids, and I'd say that is for sure. You know, right. I mean, how many bills, how many questions, how many, you know, things come up, we can't read it all. And I think I said sometimes that there's so much information, I really rely heavily on a few people like Dallas Cohen and Claudia Swisher and even Angela here to help me get informed. And when they come up with something, then I'm like, all right, I need to go in and look at that one, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it helps having some great educators in this system, but there is too much, and I don't know how to read all of it.
Right, and the bills are often written with that really wacky jargon.
Lawyer speak.
Yeah, which is also hard to understand. And in things like, was it the gross production motor tax or motor something, something, sales, something? And Rick Grindle, well, he was talking about it one time. He goes, when they changed that formula, Even though it doesn't sound like it has anything to do with education, they took a huge hit because of the way they were funded out of it. So things that you don't even think would make a difference, have an impact. It's, I don't know. I just feel like in this day and age, with all this technology that's available to us, we can completely tighten up our tax structure and modernize it. I feel like we're still using some tax laws that were written in the 1970s, and that was 40 years ago.
Well, and it's not like we're first in education, 10th in education, 30th in education. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? To be able to sustain some of these hits.
We are 50th.
Yeah, we're last in education. So that's the last place you would think that we should be cutting if we want to make our state look like a state worth coming to. You guys come on out here, bring your businesses this way, but your kids will be raised and to be dumb as a box of rocks.
And don't expect any help on higher ed because we've cut them more than anything else.
Exactly. Yeah. It just is crazy to me.
Yep. Seth Meyer, who is at Seth Meyer, he said, with our words being twisted and used against us so frequently, I understand why districts shy away from being loud about issues. And he's right. There's that conservative corner that grabs the one sentence and takes it completely out of context. I mean, we've all read it. Some of us have read it, I guess. Not we all, but I don't know. The struggle is real.
Yeah. It is definitely real.
Q4, does your community hold town halls to educate the general public about the current crisis of our public schools are in, and how often do they do that? And I don't believe, outside of a regularly scheduled school board meeting, which has to follow the open meeting policies.
Sure.
I don't think that we've had a town hall style situation that I'm aware of.
We're across the state, so that would be difficult. We would have to hold many town halls to make that happen.
If you guys, though, could utilize the metropolitan areas or maybe some geographic regions to, should you want?
We have 10 testing sites across the state that we ask our students to come to for state testing. I'm sure they would probably utilize something like that.
And do like a video town hall situation.
Start using the YouTubes or Facebook Live to do some of that stuff. Good idea. John Croissant.
Oh, I'm hungry.
I hope you said that right. I know. He is at jcroissant3. He says, I feel there are plenty of forums, but I'm not sure the passion and anger from these forums are making it to the Capitol. Yes. And so he's had some, maybe.
Yeah. Sounds interesting. Kimberly Blodgett, who's at Kimber Blodgett, said, I think it's important for admin to realize a meeting discussing budget cuts is necessary. Some things can't be an email. When you see the face of your superintendent or your school admin and they're sharing with you in real life, as opposed to an email detailing all the hits and cuts and issues, I think that definitely is different when you can see it in person. I would love to see a town hall situation, maybe where there's no new business, no old business, no deciding business, but maybe just that we're having a town hall. This is the state of my school system.
I like that.
You know, like a state of the union situation. Here's where we're at.
Yeah.
Here's how the tax structures work. Here's where we're getting new taxes. Here's where they've been cut. Here's where, and then maybe that will help John Q. Public understand all of that, because school finance is just a big complicated mess of things. I don't even understand all of it. You have to take a whole, there's like two or three classes in a row that you take to just sort of get a handle on it. I mean, Rick Cobb wrote a dissertation on it. I mean, this is a complicated situation.
And it shouldn't be that complicated, I think.
I think we can do better.
Yeah.
Because you got all these, and one of the issues is you have all these silos of money that can only be used inside those silos. So if one silo needs money and one silo has it, you can't load it up in a truck and deposit it in the other silo. It's just
right.
You can't do it.
Question Where five. Is in every other system? Sorry, I know. I tried to go to the next question. You've tried. You know, in every other system out there, maybe not every other system, you borrow.
Sometimes left hand. You borrow has to from help one right account hand.
To Yeah. I mean Yeah, anyway, moving on. What questions do you feel parents are most passionate about when it comes to their child's education? And, whatever affects their kids, right?
Right.
You know, I don't remember exactly what I said, but, you know, what affects their kids and their kids' future is what parents, you know, are passionate about.
I would agree with that. And I think the thing, and I'm sure that I missed chat on Sunday, but I think one of the things for me was with my two daughters had to go through RSA. My son did not. And they're 8. And there's just something fundamentally wrong with telling an 8-year-old, you have to pass this test to go into fourth grade. I mean, my two daughters at 8 years old were completely different from each other. Their strengths were completely different from each other. They were different readers even. Like, they have different reading strengths. They're just different. And trying to say every single third grader, and oh, by the way, you just don't go to fourth grade. No matter how well you did everything else, it has to go to this committee. I just have such a huge problem with that. And I think that's the one thing for me where, I mean, that's the biggest deal. No other grade does that happen.
So Angela Clark Little said the same thing. She said, the issue that woke me up was the third grade retention testing. It puts unneeded stress and anxiety on my children. And so I was able to get in a phone call with Joy Hoffmeister this week. And I don't want to take what you said and invalidate any of it, because I hate that a third grader must take 2 50-question tests. Mm-hmm. That's too long. It's too much. It's way too much. But she said that basically when it comes to RSA, that is at the government level. We have to show accountability. They give so much local control to students and our state, though, and that there are 7 good cause exemptions, one of them being a portfolio of the year's worth of work, and then 15 different sub-assessments, basically. Like, okay, that might have been a bad day for your kiddo, Scott, but let's go and take this Dibbles test. Dibbles is one of them that they can use.
Right.
And if she does well on this Dibbles test, then it's fine. And she said, and I will quote this, she said 54,000 plus third graders took the reading test last year. Mm-hmm. 1,600 of them were retained.
Okay.
And so that's a pretty small number. I mean, it's a huge number. 1,600 is a big number. But in the sight of 54,000, and she said that they're basically, and I bet you get pulled into this too, Scott, just so you know, and maybe you've got some say in this, but she wants to have a bloggers, podcasters, and some of the key players in Okla Ed. She wants to have a sit down with them and talk about some of these things because she's sick of schools saying you have to pass this test or you don't go on. But she also said you won't find many school administrators that will get rid of it because they get funding for it.
Right. I get everything that you just said, and I appreciate Joy's leadership and her explanation and all that. And but I look around and not all 50 states make third graders take a test to document their learning.
True. Very true.
And are there ways to get around if you fail? There are. The fact that it has to happen that way, the fact that we're having a discussion on it, and the fact that we have to then look at all the subsets, bothers me.
Right. No, I mean, the fact that it has to happen. And I told her that. I was like, why with the ESA does this have to happen? And then that's when she was telling me about the school administrations. And even that isn't fully funded, just so you know. Mm-hmm. I think they can allocate, I hope I don't get this wrong, but like 100, 150. But she thinks that the actual funding per student is $50. And so my question back to her is, what's the school do for $50 per student that's not on grade level and reading? You can't hire a tutor for $50. You can't. I mean, what do you? Yeah. I mean, thank you for the money. You know, the schools need the money. But what is $50 going to do to get a kiddo on grade level?
Here's the other thing. I certainly don't mind my kids taking a reading test in third grade. That's not what I'm saying either, because all three of my kids have been placed on reading interventions in third grade. All three of them. And And I'm completely comfortable with that, because what that says is their teachers have recognized that they have a struggle with a particular issue, and they get intensive help on that, which is only going to benefit them later as older students. So by all means, please help my kids become better readers in whatever manner you have. But to hold them to this test, I just am not a fan. Anyways, there's Renee your passion.
Bell said something.
So BioBell rocks. Renee, thank goodness she was tweeting, because she's in twice today. Parents respond to what they hear is directly impacting their children. We need to be sure the voice media they hear is the truth.
And so that, too, is something huge. There have been a couple of false information, news articles, and even on Channel 9 News, they ran a story at 6 o'clock. Somebody from the State Department saw it and they were like, that's not true at all. Had a conversation and it was pulled from the 10 o'clock show. Mm-hmm. And so if we have even the news outlets giving misinformation, you know, how are any of us supposed to know, you know, unless we're calling the State Department regularly to fact check? Which she encouraged, but how do you do? You know, I mean, you can't just call over every little thing, or they're going to be inundated. That's not scalable.
Yeah, so. and then that's difficult for them to effectively communicate.
Sure.
Question 6: how can we get more parents not only engaged but passionate about advocating for OCLA Ed? And I would just say, you want to get parents advocating, and I'm not saying this is what needs to happen, but it would get your parents all juicy. You just simply say any secondary activity is no longer supported. No basketball, no wrestling, no baseball, no drama, no vocal, no choir, no band, none of it. Because what you say is, we can't afford to do all of that and fund our teachers and our students. And I guarantee it, if Broken Arrow and Jinx can't have their football game, or Jinx and Union, whoever it is up there that has the Tulsa Oil Bowl or whatever it is, or if you can't if you can't get some of those huge holiday basketball tournaments that occur during Christmas break with all the small towns everywhere, where like droves of people just show up in small town Oklahoma to watch basketball, if that's not happening, if you take away
wrestling tournaments,
wrestling in some of our communities is huge, huge, huge. I mean, if you take all that away, or baseball or whatever, I guarantee you parents are going to be upset. I love watching my son's concert. He plays bassoon. It's this huge instrument, and I love going to his concerts. The music is fun. It's great to see the hard work that the kids put in, and when that's their game time. But I guarantee if they took that away, I would fuss, because he enjoys playing.
Right. Well, and it's a motivating factor for several. It is a moneymaker for, you know, some, but you're right. As soon as we say that, their ears are on point. They're ready to be involved. Mm-hmm. So
Trey Kirkpatrick, who is at WDTK33, he said, inform, inform, inform. If they know how truly bad things are and how awesome our teas are, they will become our biggest asset. Boom.
So inform, inform, inform. Dina Rogers said, building positive relationships with parents first and then asking for support. It's about their kids, not the adults. And I do think the classroom teacher is the person on the forefront. I mean, they are the ones that have the most communication with that parent. And if the schools really equip the teachers to have those conversations, then I think that's where it happens. I mean, the teachers and the parents, that's probably where the information needs to come from. I just think the schools need to do a better job of explaining it to the teachers, so that the teachers can then go out and disseminate the information.
Yeah, and also, you know, she summed it up, it's about their kids, not the adults. And I think one thing that can help us as teachers even is just talk about how much funding per pupil the Oklahoma is committing right now, which is also at the bottom of the barrel. Because if we can increase the funding per pupil, that will have an impact in teacher salary. But then also,
for sure,
that takes it away kind of from us as going, hey, honor us, and saying, no, fund the kids. And I got that from a friend of mine who's super brilliant at KMAC. That's a true story right there. I think if we just change that narrative just a little bit, it does put it back on the kids. And takes us out of that particular piece.
Right. No, I think that you're 100% right there, and so is KMAC. Question 7. Do you feel parents in your area are fully aware of funding issues within Okla Ed? Why and why not? I don't. I really don't. And so Alan Lehman kind of said exactly what I said here, but I'll give him the credit. He's at Alan_Lehman. School finance is confusing. You said that earlier, Scott. It's hard to explain why some bond issue paid for the new stadium, but salaries are still low. And when that state question 779 last year, was on the table, and then even after, anytime I had a conversation with parents, it was crazy to them how and why we thought we needed more money in education when they were getting a new building or a new wing put on or a new AstroTurf or, you know, we just went one-to-one Chrome pads. Get rid of Chrome pads. Great.
It's a Chromebook or an iPad, Aaron.
Or an iPad. Well, I'm creating new technology here.
Okay.
Do you hear me, Apple? Anyway, they're like, you know, how do we not have money if we just bought iPads?
Right.
Well, your bond issue passed those iPads.
Right.
And I do think some people go and blindly vote. You know, somebody wants us to vote yes on the bond issue. Let's go vote yes. They do. And now they've got iPads, but they just fired 4 teachers.
Right. Because those are your silos that don't talk back and forth to each other. Yeah.
Yep. It's different.
Stacey Romerman, and she is at Stacey Roman, said yes and no. School funding is a little complicated. Most know there is less dollars, but not why or how to change things.
Right.
So I think both of those tweets are perfect for this question.
So maybe we inform about the you know...
how the money's spent.
Thank you. Thank you for backing me up there.
I know when school districts go through bond issues, they do inform. This is exactly how it's going to be spent. This is exactly where it's going to go. This is exactly how it's going to be used. This is exactly what we can do with it. But at the same time, I don't know that everybody in the community understands that is only where that goes.
Right.
Like, this is a special purchase for the school district.
I can send out an email or some sort of a communication, and just because I've informed doesn't mean you listened at all.
What were you talking about? I was looking at my phone.
I hate you sometimes.
True story. Like how, I mean, I'll admit, sometimes I get snowed with emails from school. So they inform me, but I deleted it because I'm like, all right, another one, moving on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Question 8, as a parent, I see T's as my partners in shaping my children's lives. Do parents feel the same in your district? Explain.
Man, I think that's a good question, and I love that she sees it that way. It's so refreshing to hear a parent say that. Mm-hmm. I know with my school, we have a parent contract that says they will dedicate a minimum of 20 hours to being with their student and helping their student and helping the school. And so we do have very involved parents. So that's, you know, that's one thing. But Stephanie Hinton, and she is at Steph Hinton, says it's important for parents to know that they are partners in their child's education. Communicating this is an important part of our role. I mean, why wouldn't you want the parents involved?
I don't know why you wouldn't want the parents involved. But I think sometimes, too, we feel like it's an adversarial relationship. Because everybody's an expert on education sometimes. And I'm not saying always, but I'm saying there's instances where there's not so much partnering together, but there's more like, this is what I need for my kid. Why aren't you doing it?
Okay.
I
can even see it going the other way where a parent may feel like, well, the teacher knows best. I'll just let them do
right.
it.
Right. And then they don't voice. Yeah, exactly. And then the parent doesn't voice their concerns with issues that are maybe unique or pertaining to their child. So I think it goes both ways there. And I think sometimes we forget that we are partners in all of this. We are trying to work together through all of this. We do need to support each other through all of this. But I can tell you, I remember a couple parent-teacher conferences where certain parents showed up and I had the old adrenaline dump into my tummy of nerves because I was getting ready to have to talk to them about something that they weren't pleased about with me.
Sure.
I mean, And it, at that point, Tom, I didn't feel very partnery.
No, that would be very difficult.
I think there's parents that go in and talk with teachers that feel super, super intimidated by the teacher.
Sure. Oh, I totally agree with that.
And they feel the same thing.
When you were in the classroom, do you feel like you had extra communication, or were you just communicating at parent-teacher times, or, you know, or when there was a discipline action involved?
I would often start the year off communicating about once a week. Then it was like once every couple of weeks, then once a month. And by the time spring rolled around, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. I feel that way.
But I felt like the way they did parent-teacher conferences at Memorial, I was able to really talk a lot with parents about a lot of things.
Just good.
The way that it was designed and set up promoted a really good conversation.
So not everybody in my school does this, but, you know, I have about 50 kids in right. and out of my house all week.
Right.
So I see parents literally every day. And if something comes up, you know, it comes up every day. So, I mean, not, you know, communication about Oklahoma legislature or Oklahoma Ed, but I do feel like at least with my parents, I can talk to them almost about anything. We've kind of almost got a familial relationship going on, which right. is weird and cool at the same time.
Yeah, but you're seeing them every day too. You're not seeing them once,
right?
Once every 9 weeks. And that was something else too that I would love to have seen changed at our school. And sometimes the teachers grumbled about it, and I get it. Because we work really hard, and time off is, you know, after that day ends, you want that break. But we would only have one designated parent-teacher conference night at Memorial. And I really wish we could have had three or four. Just to kind of have it ongoing all year round. And I'd even talked with somebody, I was talking with a friend, and I go, I wouldn't even mind if we could do this monthly. I mean,
well,
just
I mean,
open the
how
school
do you
up,
expect
let
to
the
have...
community in monthly, and let's have a conversation about education.
Yeah. How do you expect to have a partnership if you're never seeing your partner?
Right.
Never communicating with your partner. Yeah.
I wasn't the best. I could certainly get better. I can always improve on all of that. But
of course, we all can.
I feel like, too, the sometimes some of the structures that we live in, because we've always done it this way, this is how we're going to always do it, need to be reevaluated, especially when it comes to this.
Well, your tweet, what Linda says here, is pretty out of the box as far as parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah, this was great. What Linda Hassler-Reed said, she said, this year we hosted parent-teacher conferences at the apartments where some of our ELL and least resource students reside. Parents were very receptive. And boom sauce, double stamp sees, amazeballs. That's all.
Did you take that as your boom sauce?
I think I picked a different one. But that would be the, since I put it here, I didn't put it in boom sauce. But
sure.
This is
but that's amazing.
That is right on.
Talk about, you know, really working with the community. That's great.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Question 9. With 90%.
Hold on now. Did you tell us what Stephanie
said?
The Stephanie Hinton. What'd she say?
Yeah, I said that.
Okay.
But I'll say it again. Stephanie, it's important that parents know that their partners in their child's education communicating this is an important part of our role.
Oh,
maybe I
didn't
say the last part.
Okay, maybe not. Because then we got off on a difficulties of appropriately communicating and how hard it is.
All right. Now, with 90% of our Oklahoma's children in public schools, why aren't there more Oklahoma Ed advocates? And I saw a tweet. I think it was Vanessa Perez. She said, that's the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. Why? Why aren't there? You know, I think if we could answer that question, then we'd know exactly what we need to be doing, you know, from now on.
Right. I don't know. I think it's interesting. I wonder, too, you know, Oklahoma is not a wealthy state. And I wonder if there's a correlation between that and the advocating that could happen on public education behalf.
Hey, I mean, it definitely could. I mean, it definitely could be a direct correlation.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would just be curious.
Yeah. Sarah Bruhill. Do you know how to say her last name?
I don't know. Bruhill?
Bruhill?
Sarah from Lawton.
Sarah from Lawton. She used to be Lady Wolf.
Yeah, she used to be.
She changed her name like I did.
She did.
Anyway, She said, how often do we go out into our community? Just when we need something, right before a bond vote. It has to be consistent.
Yeah.
And this, I think, goes back to just more communication, more talking, you know, sharing in successes as well as sharing in, hey, we need you.
Right.
Again, we need you.
I think the town hall thing, the meeting where the parents are thing, those are good ways to do this. But I don't think Sarah's teaching anymore. I think she's stepped out of teaching.
No, I saw that. And she's in real estate.
Yeah.
So sad. We lost another one.
And she... pretty passionate. So
no, I got to share a room with her and Vanessa Perez. We had only ever known each other on the Twitters. And they let me share a hotel with them at Podstock in Kansas. And I fell in love with those two women.
Yeah, they're great.
Vanessa and Sarah.
Jeffrey Corbett, who is the state PTA. I don't know if he's still super involved in state PTA, but he has something to do with the state level PTA. And he is at Jeffrey Corbett. He said, I don't think we've figured out how to engage the singles or no children families. They don't understand how it affects them.
Well, and I think a lot of them think if it doesn't affect me, then why get involved?
Right. I'm retired.
So I think he's...
I don't have kids in school. Doesn't matter.
Or I don't have kids and don't feel like having kids. But that doesn't mean that you... I mean, listen, here's what it is. Even if you choose not to have kids, and I've got a couple of sets of friends that are that way, your neighborhood is directly impacted. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, your neighborhood is directly impacted as to what the school is able to produce. What they're able to produce directly impacts the students that live in your neighborhood, which directly impacts the way your neighborhood looks, the community of it, the social feel of your neighborhood. Even if you don't have kids, you can still be involved in this matter.
Right. For sure. Like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're making a conscious decision that you want to spend time and pour into a younger person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Question 10. What can you personally do to encourage parents to get more involved with OCLA Ed advocacy? And I don't know what else I could do. So I guess I could knock on doors and campaign for it. But I really loved what Alan_Layman had to say. By being that T that makes P's want to stand up and advocate, by being relentlessly positive, by presenting ourselves correctly.
Yeah. Yes. There's a lot to be said for that.
Indeedly do.
Well, Jack Reed, who is at JLReed2011, said, all I can do is inform parents or P's when I can and ask for their help. By communicating and reaching out, I hope that they can be supportive.
Mm-hmm. There you go. There's your questions.
What was your favorite question, Scott?
I really like the one, do you feel parents in your area are fully aware of the funding issues? Why or why not? Because I think if we can solve that little nugget, I think it can unlock a lot of things. I just feel like there's a lot of confusion about how schools are funded and worked and where the tax money comes from. I don't even know everything. And I've been involved in school my whole life.
Right. I really liked the one that was 90% of the children are in public schools. Why aren't there more OCLA Ed advocates? And for me, that one's one just to think on and ponder on and try to figure out, you know, how do we get more people involved? So,
yeah. What about your boom saucer? What about your boom
sauce? There?
Yeah. What about your boom sauce tweet?
Boom sauce tweet. It came from Vanessa Perez, and she is at V Parisi. What doesn't my district do? I mean, at Coach 57, which is, Coach Heim, and at Bridges Tyler, who is Tyler Bridges, opened my mind to the new level of activism and parent advocacy. And I think his group really does do a great job of being out there, being a sounding board, and being a megaphone for OCLA Ed. And I really appreciate what that camp's doing.
Yeah, they work really hard at that. Super, super hard. I went with Renee Bell, Bio Bell Rocks. And this was actually her answer to the first question. She said, parent voices are where the power lies. They are the advocates that are directly linked to their own children and to votes.
Yeah. They matter.
Yeah.
Parents matter.
Indeed. Big time. Big time. So there you go. There's another chat down.
All right. So next week?
Next week, we're going to have the brilliant Atwaters English hosting. And she has started, she's got a side, I believe this is a side project that's growing here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Talk to me. What is it?
I don't know. That's why I think this is going to be pretty cool. But it's growing invisible voices. And I like it already.
Well, it definitely sounds intriguing. So yeah. I'm down to find out what she has going here.
I think it'll be
really cool. It'll happen at 8 p.m.
Yep, on Sunday.
On Sunday.
Yeah. Yep. Just like every Sunday.
Every single Sunday.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
There we go.
Fantastic.
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.